Good evening. Welcome to the regular meeting of the Harbor Advisory Board for the City of Morro Bay. Today is Thursday, February 6, 2014. It's 6:03 p.m. Please let the record reflect that we do have all seven seats here filled. We do have quorum. It's nice to see our two seats filled, and it's very nice to have a fisherman here. We will start off the meeting tonight with a moment of silence, please. And we'll now move on to the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And we will now move on to Chair and Advisory Board Member announcements and presentations. We will start down at this end from the Trans-Pacific Man.
Should we elect a new president?
That's at the end. Yes, a new chairman.
Storms are showing up. Make sure your pennant lines are tied up. You have good lines.
Thank you, Gene. Lynn?
No comment.
Alan?
No comment.
Dana?
No comment.
Bill? And Ron. I do have an announcement to make. In a week from now, we've got a very important day, a week and a day for all the lovers out in the audience. It'll be Valentine's Day next Friday. I've got a fantastic idea for you. The day following Valentine's Day, the Morro Bay Community Foundation is hosting a play. It's a fundraiser called Love Letters. So if you need an idea for something to do for your sweetheart, then go on to eventbrite.com. That's Eventbrite, and you spell Bright, B-R-I-T-E, and put in there Morro.
What you are doing. My name is Jose Luis Garcia. I'm the head of a marine program in Spain, in WWF. I'm working in WWF. And we are here this night because we have an agreement with EDF. Well, in the last 10 years, we have been how the fisheries in Spain has been facing a lot of problems. Really, we have an overfishing in most of our communities. How the fishing communities has decreased the number of fishermen in our waters, and also how the impact on the ecosystem, the marine ecosystem, has increased a lot. And since a couple of years, we decided to try to change the things in Spain. And in that time, we have some conversations with EDF, and to try to use their knowledge and their experience to develop a process for change towards the sustainability of the fishing. And we are now in a big initiative in Spain to change, working with a lot of communities, with fishermen, and try to change how they are managing their own resources. We are trying to promote the participatory approach in the management of the fisheries, and with a real participation of the fishermen in the management of their resources, because we think that really this is a very important issue to get the responsibility of the fishermen with their own resources, the public resources, and at the end to get a recovering of the ecosystems, of the marine ecosystem. And one of the things that we were discussing is we want to know on what is happening in other parts, and especially here in U.S., in other parts of Latin America where EDF has been working, and try to learn from you on what really you have done to get, I mean, a momentum like this night, which is, I understand, a very important moment. With after a long job during a lot of years. And probably if we were talking on what's your main challenge in that area and what's your problem that you have faced. We have a lot of to learn on that. And really, we will be here a couple of days, try to learning from you on what you are doing, how are you resolve the problems, how what things have failed, because we think that we can learn a lot on the problems of the others, and try to see how we can implement these things in our own country. So I really have to thank you, all of you, because this is a great opportunity to know you and to know about your work here in Morro Bay.
Gracias, José. Thank you very much. And otra vez, gracias a ustedes. We appreciate you being here tonight. Any other public comment? Public comment is open at this period. Anyone wishing to address the Harbor Advisory Board on any matters that are not on the agenda tonight, you're welcome to come up and speak at this time. Seeing no other public comment, we'll close public comment at this time. I do have one additional announcement to make. This is on behalf of the providers of our video service providers. Please, if you have any presentations to give or any slides, show up at least 15, 20 minutes before so that you can organize those presentations with the folks that provide our video services for us. It just makes the night run a little bit more smoothly, and we appreciate that. We will now move on to our consent calendar, which is item A1. Item A1 is the approval of minutes from the Harbor Advisory Board meeting held last month, 2 months ago, December 5th, 2013. I trust you've all had an opportunity to look over those minutes. Are there any changes or amendments to the minutes as presented? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
I'll make that motion.
It's moved by Gene to approve the minutes. A second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Dana. Any discussion? No discussion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion passes. We will now move on to public hearings, reports, and
NGO that's working in conjunction with TNC, the Nature Conservancy, and World Wildlife Fund to get these folks around the world and visiting us here on this trip. So just in case you didn't know what those acronyms are, I know we get pretty acronym heavy sometimes. So I'll try and move quickly through the status report. New Harbor Patrol vessel, fortunately I can move through that very quickly because we had a problem with the part getting delivered and we didn't go down Tuesday, so moving right along. We didn't see trial anymore this week, so hopefully next week. North T Pier, at the last City Council meeting on the 28th, the City Council awarded contract to do major repair and maintenance on the North T Pier in the amount of $532,500. The next lowest bidder was $998,300, pretty big spread, but mostly owing to the fact that Associated Pacific is here in town and they've got a leg up on competition. They don't have to put everybody up and pay per diem and whatnot, so, and mobilization and demobilization. So AP came in with a real good bid. We're going to be going to council next week asking for a little more money out of our accumulation fund to throw a few more pieces of a project at them. While they're in there doing the work. So that will hopefully get underway. This is early February, probably April, possibly May. The big lead time is on materials ordering. Nobody stockpiles treated lumber, treated pilings anymore. They pretty much build them as you need them. So there's a pretty big lead time on getting a lot of the big materials. So hopefully we'll see that this spring. On the lease front, City Council awarded a new lease down at 3033W, which is the lease site, the water-only lease site just past the old cannery property, Bayfront Marina. New folks came in and bought it from Jay and Marlene Coakley. They were the owners that had it for maybe the last 15 or so years. They came in with a good plan for operating that marina into the future for at least 20 years, and will probably exercise another 20-year option, given some more maintenance and repair and other improvements that they're going to do down there. So that was a good long 6-month negotiation, a few things to work out, follow-up things we need to work out on that lease, but that one at least is done and put to bed for the time being. Salt Building, lease site 65W, 66W, you know, where Hofbräu used to be years ago, down between the aquarium and Gray's Inn. Construction began on, they did some sidewalk work there. They've got the full 8-foot sidewalks, moved the trash can enclosure back that was encroaching on the sidewalk. Then they're going to go along the backside and do the harbor walk improvement back there, the public access harbor walk, and then do a little bit of slip work, but mostly harbor walk and sidewalk work. Lease site 67W and 68W, that's new names on those, Harborfront Suites and La Roche, I guess that's French. That's the Smith Held property and the VLA property, just north of the aquarium, between the aquarium and Salt Building there. They got occupancy for their hotel units, pretty nice. I guess they've already got a lot of bookings going there. So that has proven to be another popular option for a lot of our leaseholders. Don't have occupancy for the retail units. Each of them did a mirror project. They're two very small and skinny lease sites, and they went in together and basically did mirror image projects. Turned out pretty nice. So go down and have a look at that. Now that whole sidewalk area will get nicely cleaned up and open back up, and it won't be a construction zone anymore. So that'll be good. So that's kind of it on the lease front, at least for now. Grants, we recently got three grants from the Department of Boating and Waterways, or Division of Boating and Waterways, I guess now. They moved into state parks, so they're now Division of State Parks. We got a $9,000 grant under the Abandoned Watercraft Program. That's to get rid of abandoned and derelict vessels. $5,000 under the Vessel Turn-In Program. That's a sister grant to the AWAF. It also, for folks that have boats that they don't know what to do with, rather than sell them to somebody that will, you know, buy them for $100 and turn them into a derelict or abandon them, they can turn them into us. So we've got money to do a few boats under that program. And then we got an $11,000 grant from Boating and Waterways to purchase a new trailer for our new boat, because our new boat is too big for our old trailers. So that'll be good. As soon as that grant's executed, we'll be looking for a new trailer. Recent events, polar bear dip, that happened January 1st. We went down as usual. Didn't bring a patrol boat this time, just brought jet ski rescue craft and folks by land and by water. A number of our lifeguards went down. Coast Guard was there. We see it more as a training opportunity to interface with CAL FIRE and Cayucas Fire and other agencies. And just in addition to obviously adding the safety element for those participants, but good weather, favorable surf, so no major incidents there. On the patrol front, while we're not out there actively engaging in or intervening pongas, these Mexican smugglers that are coming up, smuggling mostly narcotics, but humans as well, we as a first responder agency eventually will probably get called into one of these when it turns into a rescue. But we help out Coast Guard and sheriffs with towing vessels or housing them or putting them on trailers, whatever we can do. But kind of more of a public service announcement that the pongas are out there. But it could be a smuggling incident, so you got to be careful. And the best thing you do is just call law enforcement and back off and get out of there. You never know what these folks are up to and who's there and what their intentions are. So people just need to be careful out there when they come across these things, because it's going to happen again. And then in January, in early January, we had a big swell. As usual, like lemmings or like moths to the light, people are attracted to the waterfront and to the ocean when the swell gets big, and they want to go out there to the north jetty out on the south side of the rock, and they want to walk out there on the rocks, and they want to get really close. Never a good idea. Guy got knocked down into the rocks, pretty beaten up. He had a compound fracture, internal injuries. Lucky he didn't die. Lucky he made it back at all. So he came back. He'd come back alive. It took, I think, 7 or 8 people to haul him out on a Stokes and get him out of there without anybody else getting hurt. But just, again, for the public out there, the old sayings, previously dry areas can be swept without notice. You know, sets, especially in the wintertime, sets of waves in these long period swells can be 15, 20, 30, 45 minutes in between sets, and you can see smaller waves and think it's fine, but then 40 minutes later, a big set comes through and washes through where you were. It's just never a good idea to get close. There's plenty of good vantage points that are plenty far back, so just everybody needs to stay back. And never turn your back on the ocean. That's the other one. You just got to be aware that the ocean's out there and can bite you at any moment. On drought, next item up on the drought front, we do have a little bit of a problem with water here. Despite the last couple of weeks, we've had a little bit of rain, which is nice, but Governor Brown did declare a drought emergency. The Morro Bay City Council also declared a more restrictive water usage policy called severe. I think we're on moderate and we went to severe. We're severely restricted. It's another tier of water irrigation and conservation efforts that the City Council is asking of everybody in the community. There's some, the city's website's really the best place to go look for the guidance and the tips and whatnot. But they've got, you know, on the property, on the land side, irrigation on different days for different addresses, no potable waters to be used for washing decks, docks, boats, marine facilities, driveways, patios, parking lots. You know, good common sense. Washing vehicles is okay with a bucket, and spring-loaded devices are supposed to be on all hoses. Restaurants are only serving water on request, so we're down. The state water system announced that they're cutting down to zero, so we're going to have to start pulling off of our, our reserves. We've got a cache of water out at the San Luis Reservoir up in north of us here, so we've got, I think, about 2 years' supply of water there, so we're going to start drawing off of that. Desal, of course, will be operating, but that won't fulfill all of our needs, nor will our wells. So it's getting serious, so we're kind of back to the mid-90s when we got pretty serious before and we had some drought. So folks just need to start cutting back on fresh water as much as possible. And I think I moved through that pretty quick, and I think that's the last thing on my list. Yep. Any questions?
Thank you, Eric. Any questions for our harbor director? We'll start with Dana.
Eric, yeah, last week, I believe it was probably last Thursday, out towards Cheney, I saw a Coast Guard, I saw a Harbor Patrol boat, and a jet ski, and a helicopter.
Was that on Sunday?
Maybe, no.
Saturday or Sunday?
Maybe.
We had an incident. Somebody called, and it's a, I won't say new because cell phones aren't new, but everybody's got a phone now, and we get a lot of, which, I mean, we want to know if people see something that doesn't look right. It looks like somebody's in trouble. But there's a lot more false alarms now. And somebody called, thought somebody was in trouble surfing, at least had, I think, a surfboard color. You know, typically it's, well, he's got a white surfboard and a black wetsuit. But it was a, everybody showed up. We thought it was a surf rescue, somebody missing. Turns out nobody was missing. It's just typical, somebody will see somebody surfing, turn around, you know, check their dog, talk to somebody, turn around, and then see them gone and think something's wrong. So the whole cavalry was called out and turned out into be nothing. And I think the helicopter just happened to be darn close, so they got called in pretty early.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions on this side? Nope. Alan, did you have a question?
Yeah, one question. On these pongas, when they come across these pongas, do they ever have guns in them?
So far, there have been one or two in Southern California, from my understanding, recovered with guns. So far, these folks have not been armed, and they've not resisted. They've been relatively passive. I think you've got, I mean, there's lots of different levels to it. You've got the boat drivers, and as soon as they get to shore and get it to shore, you know, it's somebody else's responsibility, and those are the folks that are coming by land a lot of time in rented motorhomes and vans and trying to be nondescript. You know, there's a whole group of agencies out there coordinated by Homeland Security and the Coast Guard, including sheriffs and all the local police, and there's a lot of intel. We get a lot of, we as a department are tapped into that, and we get notifications just because we're first responders. So.
And one of the things that I suggested to Eric and that I hope to see here soon is the United States Coast Guard here appearing before us with something really akin to a public service announcement, letting us know what is being done on an interagency basis to counter the smuggling Ponga boats that we've seen inundating our area here on the Central Coast. I think it's a very important issue for us. So other questions or comments? Gene?
Yeah, Eric, what happens to those Pongas and the motors after they're confiscated?
Typically, they're destroyed. I think the boats themselves are destroyed. I think Homeland Security and Immigration, and they may, I think they've, in a lot of cases, if the motors are good, they'll take the motors and use them in their own operations or surplus them out in the federal government. I know that Port San Luis is working on getting one and repurposing it, and I think they're getting approvals for that to repurpose it for a spill response and firefighting boat. So, but for the most part, they're taking them out of service and destroying them.
Yeah, I don't think you'd really want to get a used Ponga boat. You'd have a hard time with it.
that's an interesting comment, because I was down in Santa Barbara today at a Harbor Masters Association meeting, and the topic came up down there as well, and the comment from Mick Crum and my counterpart in Santa Barbara, there's a gal down there that I guess does urchin diving, and she bought a ponga years ago and she operates off of it, and now she gets stopped and questioned constantly because they're such a different looking boat that, yeah, if you've got one, good luck, because now you're going to be looked at a little more closely.
Any other questions or comments for our harbor director? All right. Thank you, Eric. So I was remiss in something, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to back up here a moment. We do have two new members on our Harbor Advisory Board. We are very pleased to see the fisherman's seat filled. We have been absent. We've had this seat absent for about a year. So we worked out something special with the City Council. We gave the City Council a recommendation to create a special seat for the fishermen on this board. Because of the very nature of fishing, fishermen are gone for a certain period of time. So we're allowing the fisherman's seat on this board to have some alternatives, and the fishermen have spoken amongst themselves and come up with a plan wherein the fisherman's seat is filled by three individuals at this point in time, one primary and two alternates, and they've arranged it again amongst themselves so that when one is out fishing, the other two will be available to us. So on our fisherman's chair, I would like to welcome Alan. Let me see if I can remember your last name, Alan. Alan Allward. So, Alan, if you would please take a moment and tell us a little bit about yourself and your background, no more than a minute or so, Alan, would be... I know these fishermen like to talk. So a minute or so is fine, Alan, if you'd like to introduce yourself, please.
Hello. I live in Cambria. I've been a fisherman in California since 1973, I think, and have lived in the Morro Bay area since 1977. Lived in Santa Barbara for 1 year in 1990 and then moved back up. I went to Cal Poly, got an engineering degree, tried to engineer. That lasted a year, and it made fishing look so good that I went back to fishing again. And I love it, and I'm real happy to be fishing out of Morro Bay. It's a great place. I'm real happy to be on the Harbor Advisory Board. I take a big interest in the harbor.
Thank you, Alan. It's a pleasure to have you here. We also have another seat that was replaced. This was the member-at-large seat, which is Ron Reisner. So, Ron, welcome to the board. If you'd please take a moment and tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm pleased to be here. Thank you.
Get the microphone right in front of you, please. Thank you.
I'm pleased to be here. Thank you. My wife and I, residents of Morro Bay. My professional background is a custom boat builder from the late 60s until the early 80s, and then became a marine surveyor, and I've been a marine surveyor since. And the last decade or so, specializing in representing owners for new and refit vessel construction projects and marine facility projects.
All right. Well, again, welcome to our two new board members, Alan Allward and Ron Reisner. We're an informal board here, so I'd like to give these guys a welcoming applause here. So, welcome aboard. We know we're going to see great things from both of you. We'll now move on to our next agenda item. If you remember, earlier in the meeting, we moved item B5 up to item B2. So we'll move on now to item B5, presentation on the Fishline Seafood app. And we have Joe here to tell us about that. Joe, please introduce yourself and tell us about the Fishline Seafood app.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the invitation. Let's see how our network's working here. Thank you. And this video we distributed as a trailer, as it were, for our main video that we produced with HMB Media, which I'm going to see if I can pull that one up now. And basically, these videos, we even had a blog post from National Fisherman Magazine where they recognized that, you know, this was a better and obviously new way of reaching people. And this is the other video, the one that was professionally produced, that describes what we do with Fishline.
Fishline's an app that we've been working on for a number of years now, and it's turning out really cool. There's a whole bunch of different aspects to the app where we as fishermen can punch up on the app when we're coming in and let you know when we're going to be here at the dock and let you know what we're going to have to sell and how much we want to sell it for. It's quite an outing to be able to come over and walk up and down the docks and talk to the fishermen. And we try to bring in different things for the kids to play with so that they can touch and hold something that comes from the ocean. We surely all target for the holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's, to try to be here prior to those holidays so everybody can get their holiday crab. You need to see the same people come back year after year. But the new app also tells all kinds of things. There's different areas that it'll give you a bio on what's going on of the different fishermen for the different ports. We leave 4 o'clock in the morning and get back at 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a fairly long day. It's taken 4 hours of driving just to get to where the gear is. So then you spend 18 hours at the block, and then you spend 4 more hours to drive home at night. As long as we have weather that we can get out and we have crab to catch, then we'll try to have, you know, product for people. So if it's ugly on the ocean, then working is a lot more difficult. And we experience how we have to adapt to try to be safe on the days that aren't really too nice.
So, as you can see, it's a pretty powerful medium, and it was really. It was really kind of exciting to have Link Bedrosian at National Fisherman write an article about these videos. And I just wanted to quickly show you the other pieces of the whole Fishline program. This is what we call the Fishline channel on Facebook. And right now we have about a dozen different people, a dozen different contributors who post to this. Everything from just beautiful pictures to promotions of the app, what different fishermen are selling, et cetera, et cetera. What people are eating at restaurants. These are shots here from the recent trip that Gail, myself, Henry, and a member of the Coastal Conservancy took to San Diego. So we've got pictures from that. And so this has gotten... The numbers are pretty amazing. In the past year, we've made 900 posts to Facebook, which have reached 141,000. Which will take a second to load. Here we go. Come on. Of pictures that, again, people have taken and uploaded to our gallery. We've got the local radio, weather, marine forecast, tides, surf, etc. Surf forecast is kind of fun. People like watching that. And then we've got recipes, some of which have been contributed by fishermen here, from other people. And we have content from the Faces of California Fishing Project, including stories and fishermen bios. So some of the guys here are listed on this as well. And then finally... We did a web version of Fish Line for people that don't have, let me find it here. Here we go. And you can see it's the same information on the app, but it's just on a web page. It's at fishlineapp.com. And together with that, we created something for the crab season. In Half Moon Bay, we created something called Crab Line, which was simply a directory of crabbers who would take orders via phone, text, or email. And this was phenomenally successful. If I look at my numbers here, I think we had over 5,000, maybe even more. Yeah, over 5,000 listings from the crabbers here were accessed just in the last 2.5 months. So the numbers are all pretty crazy. Like I said, the videos have been viewed, I think, 2,300 times. Fishline Web has had over 1,100 unique visitors. And the Fishline app itself has been downloaded over 5,000 times, which is pretty amazing given our limited geographic scope and our limited budget to promote it. So the app itself is one of the top five apps in all the app stores under seafood or fish or sustainable fish or local seafood or the main things that you would search for it. So, and that's about it. Let me go back to my slide. So if you're looking for it, here are all the places you can find it. On the Apple, Google, or Amazon app stores, if you have a smartphone. How many people have a smartphone? A lot more people. You know, last year, if we asked that question, probably half that. Fishline Web at fishlineapp.com. And then our Fishline channels on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. And then our general website is fishline.us. So, any questions?
And Joe, at the beginning, you never actually introduced yourself, so if you could do that.
Sorry.
let us know how folks can get a hold of you or where they need to go in order to find
the
app.
Yes, my name is Joe Falcone, and I'm the founder and managing partner of Fondini Partners, which is in Half Moon Bay. And I can be reached at the www.fondini.com. It's got our contact info and all that.
And the easiest way for folks to download the app?
You can go to fishline.us, and there are links from there for whatever kind of device you've got.
Excellent. So we'll now open it up to any questions or comments with regarding to Joe's presentation about the Fishline Seafood app. Questions or comments from board members? Ron?
Joe, how does Fishline ensure that the location, pricing, and product listings are current? And how does Fishline ensure that obsolete postings are taken down?
This was a question that we put. We have an advisory board, I should add, as well. And Jeff is on the advisory board. And we asked the advisory board about this issue. And so one of the things we do is we generally expire entries after 7 days. And then also, when someone posts something, they can do an additional post and say that they've run out of something. So if they've run out of something, they can do that. We also monitor the entries. So if we see something that doesn't quite look right, and we know who posted it, we try to get in touch with them and say, hey, you know, did you really mean to post that? Or if we see something that's obviously wrong, we just remove it. So it's just what they call curating on the internet these days. So we keep an eye on things.
Thank you, Joe. Any other questions, comments? Dana?
Yeah, is there an alert or something like that that can pop up on your app that says, hey, you were looking for this fish, this is where it's coming in right now, or something like that?
That's in our, and they had salmon for sale off the boat. And within like a couple months, that became the most popular feature on iCoSci. And so in December of 2012, we decided to spin it off as its own app. And then we got funding from the cable committee in 2013 bootstrap funding to basically allow us to do that.
And for financing, the cable company did that, but do the fishermen also make a contribution in any way?
It's free for anyone who wants to post where fresh local seafood is being sold or prepared or whatever. Fishermen, restaurants, seafood markets, CSS, it's free for all of them to post. So any of you could post, Eric could post. So if you know that someone's selling either off the boat or even if we're trying to get more restaurants to participate, because I think this is a really nice way for restaurants to advertise that they're selling local seafood. You know, when they have local halibut or local swordfish or things like that. But for fishermen selling off the boat or if they're selling into a particular market or a CSF, we've had a lot of postings for the, what's it called, Slow Fresh Catch? Slow Fresh Catch has done a lot of postings as they sold at the farmers markets. So basically we're here to promote the entire downstream market of locally caught seafood.
Thank you.
So the operative word is it's free. For restaurants, fish purveyors, fishermen to post.
The app is free. The app is also free.
Free. We like that word. Alan.
Free.
Yeah, I have a question and a comment. Comment first. I'm really glad to see that. It's a great idea. Great for the fishermen. I know not too many people sell off their boats in Morro Bay, it doesn't seem like. And I'm curious, has anybody sold albacore here in the fall using your app off the boat?
I don't remember whether we had postings for albacore.
Yeah, but not off the boat. Because there's
right, okay. I know we've had albacore posting.
Yeah,
They can't hear you out there, my dear.
So Gail was saying that we've had postings of albacore, but not off the boat sales, but either at a market or a restaurant.
Okay.
Or at a farmer's market.
You mentioned that when there was a glut of salmon and they couldn't really sell them effectively, that we sometimes have that problem in the fall here when we come down with the last load of fish of tuna that the market can't handle it. And real interesting opportunity for us albacore fishermen here.
Yes. I mean, and I'll just add this, is for the crab season in Half Moon Bay, we had quite a number of fishermen who never sold to the wholesalers at all. They did all their sales off the boat because they figured that we increased off-the-boat sales by about 25% for the season because people were literally coming and saying, either they were calling or emailing because they got the contact information from Fishline, from the crab line feature, or they were literally coming to the boats and saying, I saw you on Fishline, you know, I want to buy some whatever. And it really kind of amazed us that it had that kind of impact. But we had an excellent media season. We had 8 articles, even in the Chinese language press, over the crab season, and it really, really helped the fishermen. So.
And Joe, as a fisherman, a restaurant, or a purveyor of fish, what does it cost me to post on the app?
Absolutely nothing.
It's free.
Nada. Right.
Okay. any other questions or comments for Joe? Thank you very much,
okay.
Joe. We appreciate your presentation tonight.
Okay, thank you.
That concludes. Look at that. Rousing round of applause there for you, Joe. Good job. That concludes item B5, presentation of the Fishline Seafood App. We'll now move on to item B2, the presentation of the draft Morro Bay Fishing Community Sustainability Plan for the Harbor Advisory Board. And we will entertain this plan and give you any review or recommendations that we have. So welcome. Please introduce yourself and the plan, and the floor is yours.
Cool. Thank you.
Is there a flicker?
Thank you, Harbor Advisory Board Chairman Eccles, the entire board.
Harbor Director Eric Endesby and former Harbor Director Rick Algert, project managers of this project, 2010, and then economic impact reports in 11, 12, and 13. And we've formed many personal and professional relationships since and have called on quite a few of those in the community sustainability plan. So the plan in late 2011, the city of Morro Bay pursued in collaboration with the city of Monterey. The city of Morro Bay led the pursuit of a National Fish and Wildlife grant, and in May of 2012, they were awarded the grant to develop community sustainability plans in each one of these communities. Community sustainability plans are required in the Magnuson-Stevens Act, which is a federal law that oversees our federal fisheries in the United States. And the city of Morro Bay and the fishing community pursued this grant to develop a plan to put themselves in the best position for some regulation that had been enacted in 2011 in the groundfish fishery. The groundfish fishery was the impetus for the project, very important fishery in Morro Bay. Between 1990 and 2012, groundfish have generated almost 45% of the earnings at the dock, or about $49 million. But the grant and the fishing community urged us to take a more comprehensive and triple bottom line approach to the community sustainability plan, look at groundfish as well as all the other fisheries that contribute to the social, economic, and environmental benefit of the community. We also looked at aquaculture and recreational fishing as part of the working waterfront and the economic ecosystem. It's important to know, too, that the Morro Bay and Monterey CSPs, Community Sustainability Plans, were the first two in the state of California and the first two comprehensive CSPs on the west coast of the United States. So I think if there's any takeaways, anything we should remember in walking away from this presentation and this project, that our commercial fishing industry and our community is very capable of strategic planning and engaging in partnerships and attracting funding. And this is one of the complaints that's leveled at the commercial fishing industry in general, which is not the case in Morro Bay. It's a very, very capable community. The second issue, I think, as a takeaway, is that the commercial fishing industry here in Morro Bay has taken a very active role in issues that will affect them. They're a very proactive community, whether it's presence at the federal or state regulatory meetings or a concerted voice in opposing, for example, seismic testing off the coast. Also, that our fishery is unique and valuable. Our industry, the commercial fishing industry, generates almost 200 jobs on the waterfront. And as you can see here, from a 20-year low in 2007 of just under $2 million generated at the dock, landing earnings have grown consistently through 2012, where when over $6 million was landed. In 2013 proves to be equally as powerful, if not more powerful. So the goals of the project were to fulfill the tenets of the Magnuson-Stevens Act, as I mentioned earlier, to continue with this ongoing social and economic and environmental kind of inventory, this ongoing strategic planning, to put the community in a position where they can anticipate changes, regulatory or market changes, and to focus on implementation. It was very clear from the onset of the project that the fishing community and the city wanted us to focus on the highest priority issues and get things lined up for the next phase, funding and implementation. The community is very focused on getting things done. So our methods relied heavily on community engagement,
you know, much of this community, we engaged in, you know, visits to the dock, emails. I think we conducted about 40 formal interviews and hours down to the dock. And it really, you know, the input from this stems from our years of work here and the, you know, the participation of the fishermen Eric and Rick. We also drew on state, federal, and local data sources as well, maintain some or most of its critical physical infrastructure. That includes, we have a state-of-the-art ice machine, we got a fuel dock in our harbor, we've got a dredged harbor, four offloading facilities, you know, sufficient vehicle access, live tanks, slips and piers, and baiting service and chandlery. And certainly, there are some things that we are missing, like potentially a boatyard or freezer facilities. Those were included in the recommendations, as was maintaining current levels of things like vehicle access and slips and piers. So, so in terms of economic findings, one of the most significant contributions that our commercial fishing industry makes to the community is a synergy with the county's $1.2 billion tourism industry. In 07 and 08, opinion polls that were conducted in California of 800 residents in terms of what kind of areas they seek out for holiday, for their pastime, 71% said they seek out working waterfronts. And tourist professionals and civic leaders in Crescent City, Morro Bay, and Monterey gave tourism from a working waterfront 8.8 out of 10, at a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the highest for tourism generated from working waterfront. So this synergy with tourism is very, very powerful. We also found that the commercial fishing industry generates between 170 and 194 jobs. Those are direct jobs on the vessel for the skipper, for the deckhand, on the deck for the baiting facility, and at the processing plant. And those jobs are as a direct result from landings in Morro Bay. The foundation of the economics is what fishermen earn at the dock. Fishermen in Morro Bay have generated between 1990 and 2012. 2012 was the last year of data we had when we put the report together. Commercial fishing industry has generated over $120 million at the dock. We've also, you know, it's a generator of jobs and fishing trips. Fishing trips have rose from about 3,500 in 2007 or 2008 to almost 6,000 in 2012. Every trip represents wages for skippers, potential wages for deckhands on the dock, purchases of fuel, purchases of ice, purchases of supplies. So in terms of the environmental setting of the commercial fishing industry, of the tens of thousands of species off our coast, the 25 or so that are targeted by the commercial fishing industry are overseen by some federal or state or both management, which includes science-based stock assessments, seasonal closures, spatial closures, gear restrictions, size limits. Even our swordfish fishermen are limited to the hour of the day they can deploy their nets and when they have to pull their nets out of the water. We've got 100% observer requirement restrictions for some of our groundfish fishermen. I'm sure Rob has got a observer lined up for his boat tonight. When he offloads, there has to be a federal observer there. So we're very, very strictly observed fishery. And the whole concept of transparency as a hallmark of sustainability, you can go on the California Department of Fish and Wildlife website and see how much fish is landed in what port, by what species, and what fishermen are being paid. The data is a year old, but this whole concept of transparency is a hallmark of sustainability, as I said. In 2009... 19 scientists led by leading fishery population biologist Ray Hilborn published an article in the journal Science, and they studied 10 ecosystems around the world, and they concluded that California had some of the best management measures to take population levels of fish above the long-term average. So in terms of social findings, I think this is where Morro Bay continues to shine. You know, the hallmarks for sustainability, what are the things that assure the long-term persistence of an industry? The active participation in decisions that affect the industry is a hallmark of sustainability, and we talked about Morro Bay's presence at the federal fish federal meetings, state meetings, being able to come together to oppose or support something like the fisheries, and represents small operations, large operations, and the ability, you know, the formation of the Central Coast Women for Fisheries. I think Tiffany's here, and they're very successful efforts in raising money and distributing scholarships in the community are evidence of the community's ability to self-organize and bring benefit to the community. This is the, you know, you don't join an organization if you feel like things aren't going well, if you don't have hope for the future. This is the this is the membership of the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization between 2008 and 2012. So the recommendations are really, kind of, as we mentioned, they're a culmination of our outreach in the community and the research that we did on the economic, environmental, and social impacts and settings. You know, the community of Morro Bay has been studying the feasibility of a boatyard and a haul-out facility since 1997. That came out top on the list. That we maintain a fuel, an efficient and affordable fuel facility in the harbor, very important, and was one of the top recommendations. The refrigerated storage and deep freeze, promotion and marketing, page 82, we mentioned fish line in there. Anyway, those are the top recommendations. And with each one of the recommendations, hard to see on the slide, we talk about the economic, environmental, and social implications of the recommendations that we've made. Funding sources is Hank the Fish. I wanted to call it Tim, but the staff wanted to call it Hank the Fish, at Hank the Fish. 21 potential sources, including state and federal grants, private grants, public-private partnerships, debt funding, community lending, even the formation of a special district to help implement, provide seed money for implementation. Thank you. This slide is I think the gentleman who took that photo is back there in the corner. This line is a tribute to Captain Ed Ewing, kind of a visionary, an unlikely visionary in our community. He's driving the forklift. I don't think I can repeat what he was saying at that moment. But this is a nod to Captain Ewing and all the other fishermen here. What's available right now is a public review draft. It's available on the City of Morro Bay website, www.morro-bay.ca.us, Commercial Fishing Corner. And if you've got comments on the document, you can make those comments available in writing. The Harbor Department, 1275 Embarcadero, or email Eric directly at edersby@morrobay.us with the hyphen in. Did I spell it wrong? You know what I did? I tried to change the color to black, and I pulled it out, and I retyped it, and, of course, I made a mistake. Don't email to that address. So anyway, that concludes my presentation. Thank you very much. If we have any questions, be happy to address them.
Thank you, Henry. We won't go to questions from the board at this moment, but we will return to you with questions from the board. Since this is a public hearing item, what we will do to move forward is we will hear public comment regarding this, and then at that time we'll open up questions from the board. So anyone from the public that would like to address the board with regard to this item, the Morro Bay Fishing Community Sustainability Plan, please come forward at this time, state your name and your city of residence and any comments that you may have. Don't knock each other over out there. Any public comment? The public comment period is hereby closed. We'll now move on to questions or comments from board members. Henry, you can come on back up, please. So any questions or comments with regard to the plan? We'll start down at this end. Gene?
No questions now.
Lynn?
Yes, first definition of returning. I understand a new fisherman coming into the industry locally, but a returning fisherman, how is that defined?
Yeah, a returning fisherman vessel is someone who's left the industry to pursue another career, and it was drawn back into the fishery because of profit opportunities.
Is there a time element in that?
No, but within 5 years, we had 17 new and returning fishermen and 12 new boats in the harbor. Some of the boats were new and returning boats in the harbor. It was pointed out to us too that the most important factor there was the fact that the community, when an individual returns into the fishery, this is one of the variables that they're looking at, what the restrictions are the profits that I could make in this fishery sufficient to offset the restrictions that I'll be facing.
So there is not really excess competition in the industry.
There's excess demand.
So. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. Ellen?
I read the report. I thought it was a great report. Couldn't get over it. In fact, I even gave you a plug up to Eureka today. They're busy up there trying to close down the marina for the commercial fishermen, and they need something like this pretty bad. They should be interested in that. I told them how to get to the link, and I thought it was a great report. I was especially impressed with the social aspects that so often get overlooked. I think that's very important. I found a couple of niggling little errors, and it's too tedious to bring it out now, but I'll get back to you on that.
Killer, good. Yeah, I wore the suit so no one would mistake me for a fisherman, so they know that I work for the fishermen. I'm not a fisherman. This report is the community's report. We just wrote it. So thank you. That's the highest praise we can get. Thank you.
So I do have a question with regard to what you just mentioned, the fishermen. So this is the Morro Bay Fishing Community's Sustainability Plan, and you mentioned economics and tourism. I have a business on the waterfront that is tourism-related that the fishing industry inadvertently feeds. But at the nexus of this, at the very basis of all this, is the ability of our fishermen and fisherwomen to go out on their boat and catch fish. So from your perspective, what is the main takeaway with regard to our fishermen? What are the main implications that you see that we can draw from your report? Because it is a bit lengthy. What's the main takeaway with regard to our men and women going out on a boat and catching fish over the next 12, 24 months?
Yeah, I think that, the takeaways are that it's a very powerful and capable community. And it's evidenced by, its ability to engage in co-management, which is getting involved in processes that affect its outcomes. So we've got something that's very powerful and unique. We've got something that's very valuable. It generates jobs. It generates investment on our dock. And there are synergies that are not easily measured, like this synergy, like the synergy with tourism. I think humans are hardwired to want to see food being caught and landed and distributed, and that the industry is alive and well, and it's it needs your support. It needs the citizen support, and I think that's, you know, the greatest takeaway, that it's valuable, it's alive and well, and it's unique. You know, if you live in a inland community, you don't have these kind of opportunities. If you live in the middle of the country, you don't have these kind of opportunities. You know, from a global perspective, this is a very unique.
So Henry, let me rephrase the question. So over the last several years, our fishermen have had to encounter more regulation and a more challenging environment in which to do their job. Over the next 36 months, do you see things getting better for them, worse for them, the same?
I think things will stay the same. I think Morro Bay, if not, we'll see slight improvements consistently in Morro Bay because we've got systems in place for marketing our fish. We've got capability in place for social leadership on the ground, on the dock, on land, and we've got a huge capability in terms of fishing. Morro Bay has been forced to adapt from a larger fleet that was reliant on trawl to a smaller fleet that's got some trawl component. But we have swordfish fishermen, we have spot prawn fishermen, we have nearshore fishermen. We have a huge diversity of fishermen using different gear on different habitats. So our long-term implications, I think the long-term prospects for the fishing industry in Morro Bay are good. Buy more local fish.
And this is my last question for you, and I'll move it down the line here. What can the fisherman do as an individual, and what can the general public do as an individual to enhance the industry and the sustainability moving forward?
Well, I think in a lot of ways the fishermen are doing it. I think John is going to get up and talk.
Thank you, Henry. We'll move down the line now. Dana?
Hi, Henry.
Dana.
I was just curious, is this conclude your plan, or what comes next? You continue on?
Yeah,
with?
Cool. We're already applying for a grant to do an economic report in 2014, so we'll have 11, 12, 13, and 14. One of the recommendations we make is to update this plan when possible, to look at how the variables have changed so we can inform the fishing community and the city what's changed and how they may modify policies and programs to take advantage of changes.
Something that's kind of come on the forefront most recently with out there on the ocean where the fishermen are, what they have left to fish in those areas, is the wave energy. Are you guys starting to work on something there as far as looking at what aspects that's going to?
Yeah, I know that the fishing community has been speaking with Blakesley. I'm not even sure what his capacity is now. I think he's representative for PG&E, and was talking with Dean Wendt at Cal Poly. So the industry is aware of this, and there's a dialogue going on. So I think, yeah, just the MBCFO is a great place to, you know, Jeremiah and Tom Hafer have been leading the charge on this. So the industry's aware. Their eyes are open. Their dukes are up. So.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'm really glad this is all going on. Thank you.
Yeah. Cool.
Thanks, Dan. Any questions, comments, Bill?
First off, it was an excellent presentation. And, you know, one of the things, as you say, what's your next step is, you know, you're going to apply for another grant, you're going to do another study. Do you ever get involved in actually trying to get funding for some of the actual things that need to get done, as opposed to just putting another study on a piece of paper? I mean, in other words, as you're applying for a grant, we need a boat haul-out facility. We maybe need more freezing capabilities, some other types of things. Do you, as your job, ever get involved in trying to get those things resolved?
Yeah, good question, and it's probably something that we should have included in the presentation to start off with. We're currently been hired by the state to get a coastal development permit for the Harbor Terrace property in Port San Luis, so we're going through the entitlement process for that design, coastal development permit, and CEQA. In San Diego, the state hired us to do a revitalization plan It was $500,000. $250,000 of that was spent at Driscoll's Wharf. The year after the plan, we helped raise $400,000 to rebuild the offloading facility, put in an ice machine, and establish a market. Currently, we're working with the MBCFO to, we've got, and I think Dana's seen our scope of work, to do a fatal flaws analysis for several boatyard haul-out and our haul-out and boatyard sites. So implementation is really important, and nobody wanted a plan that sat on the shelf and collected dust. And you know, I think the formation of the marketing association, the quota fund, and the landings that are happening, the growth in landings should all be considered part of implementation. So good question. Thank you.
Anything else, Bill?
No.
All right. Thank you, Ron.
Henry, the report is replete with shoulds. If you're in a position to address the question, are there plans to identify the whos and the hows of implementing the many shoulds?
Yeah, that's another good question. I think the responsibility timelines, you know, and connecting the potential funding sources with the project would be the next step. You know, we tried to, in terms of our funding options, we tried to look at community development block grant just came up. That program just came up with $70,000 for Noyo Harbor to do an economic study. The EDA just came up with $800,000 for Santa Cruz to update their master plan. So we're trying to identify things that were active and were appropriate for the work that we're doing. But the next step would be where we identified roles and responsibilities, timelines, and connected the dots on potential funding sources.
And who drives the next step? The city? The consultant?
Well, the driver behind much of the work that's been done here is this really powerful collaboration between the city and the commercial fishing industry, and I think that's, to revisit the takeaways, I think that's something that if...
So, Henry, what the board is being asked to do tonight is to receive this and make any recommendations to the City Council with regard to this plan and priorities and funding as staff resources allow. Is there anything in particular within this plan that you would suggest is more important than others or prioritized than others? What would you like to see us do tonight?
I think we did a lot of distilling already. We've done a lot of distilling already, despite the fact it's 100 pages long. I think the recommendations have been drilled down pretty good. And if we can... and they're prioritized to a certain extent, but if we can get funding for recommendation 7 right now and we've got a group together that can move recommendation 7 forward right now, I think any of these issues should be taken forward.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Thank you, Henry. You can have
cool.
a seat.
Thank you.
Please stand by. We may have some questions for you as we discuss this. So, board members, the recommendations are in this report. There, I believe it was 6 primary. 10. There we go. 9 and 10. So 10 specific recommendations in here. At this point, we can accept the report as is with the 10 recommendations. Move this on to the City Council with a thumbs up. We can pull out any particular of those 10 that we feel are more important or less important. So what we'll do at this point is open up to further discussion on what we want to do actually with this plan and how we want to move this on or not to the City Council. So the floor is open at this point for comments. Ron.
Is there a timeline for action on the part of the board? A deadline?
For our board?
Yes.
No, I would suggest this is probably... How long has this been in the works, Henry?
We started, I think we kicked off in
So this has been in the works since August of 2012. I would hate to see us kick the can down the road, so to speak. But to answer your question directly, no, there's no timeline for us. I think there is some timeliness to it. But Eric, do you have any further comments with regard to that?
Well, I'll let you finish up with that, and then if you're done with that comment, then I've got something to add.
Yep.
Given that there's quite a bit of substance here, I would appreciate having a short period of time to further digest it and to respond to the chair with my views on the recommendations.
Thank you, Ron. Your comment, Eric?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. So I think I'm going to back up and try and put this in context, and I may try and drag Rick along with me if he wants to add anything. But, you know, this plan was born out of a grant that we got that we had to create this plan to participate in the ITQ, the Individual Transferable Quota System that federal groundfish fisheries have moved into. So in order for us to take that Nature Conservancy quota that they bought when they bought permits that they're trying to put back into the community and get fishing and anchor here in this community rather than that quota share just being sold off into the market to the highest bidder. You know, all that work that Rick's been doing over the years with TNC, the Nature Conservancy, trying to get that quota and start surviving and living and working groundfish into this new system and creating this community fishing association, we had to create this plan. That's a federal mandate to create this plan to participate in that. Got a big grant from National Fish and Wildlife Foundation to implement this grant, hired Lisa Wise Consulting. They've come in and identified, you know, all these different parameters and made some recommendations. So what we're looking, so we've got that plan. Hopefully, we get it adopted. Enables us to continue on with that community fishing association work and get that quota share actively engaged in the association and leased out to fishermen and catching fish and making us, you know, helping us earn a living and keeping us a fishing community. At the same time, whether the federal requirements that caused this to happen, whether this is their intent or not, I think we get a lot of good byproduct out of it in that this plan is really drilled down on some of the critical things in this town, Boatyard, especially with the fishing community. It's enabled us to put this plan together and really identified our strengths and weaknesses. You know, it's kind of like, you know, in the emergency services, you call it SWOT, S-W-O-T, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. It's kind of made that SWOT analysis that enables our CFA tool for us to do the bigger projects in addition to the CFA, you know, the other things that support this community. That's what we're hoping to really get out of it. Did all that make sense, or I'm just babbling on? Oh. Rick, do you want to add anything to that?
In other words, what you're saying is that you
microphone, please.
It would be advantageous for us to approve this tonight, at least to move it to the City Council. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're hoping to move it on to the City Council with a recommendation for approval. And like I say, it'll be ultimately up to the Council through their direction, through upper management in the city, to really implement these things. And you know, eventually, you know, hopefully I get marching orders that, hey, yeah, Boatyard, that's number one we want to start working on. Then I start putting time, energy, and budgeting into it as we move forward into budgeting.
Well, you know, as Ron said, and I stated to Henry here, you know, the shoulds, this is shoulds. Now, who's going to implement this stuff? And you're right, it is the City Council, and it's the Morro Bay fishermen. So they've put the time and effort, or at least the Morro Bay fishermen specifically, into this. And we now need to get the city to back this up and to have the shoulds be handled. So I'm fine with what this document is right now to be moved on to the City Council.
So I do have a question for Henry. There are 10 recommendations within this report, and I'm a big believer in what we used to call in business CFOs, critical few objectives, which means we can really only concentrate on one at a time and sink our teeth into three. So are these in any order of priority? And one of the things we may want to consider as a board tonight is if we do decide to forward this on to the council, perhaps giving a recommendation for a focus on three of these 10 items. So the question to you, Henry, is Is the list of 10 in any order of importance or priority?
Yeah, there's a priority to the list. I think the boatyard, it being something that the community's been pursuing for almost 20 years, is important. I would say that would be number one. The fuel dock is a longer term project, and we did quite a bit of research there. Even some of the research we did was in an appendix. Promotion and marketing, I think some of that's going on right now. I think John's going to talk about some of that tonight. I think Joe Falcone talked about, we do mention fish line on page 82, so I think some of that stuff is ongoing. The support for the community quota fund, I think that's critical for us to maintain that access to the ground fish resource here. So I would call those the top two, fuel and the quota fund, and or the boatyard and the quota fund, and fuel is something that I know that Eric's already kind of working on. If we had three.
So did I just hear you say then the boatyard, the quota fund, and the fuel dock?
The quota fund appears in the on page 83, the recommendation 5, regulation and community participation.
Okay.
We were going to put quota fund in as a recommendation, but it's really part of a larger capability of the community to be able to engage in something like this. Very important. Very telling that if you're going to invest money, this is a good place to invest it. You're going to get a return on your investment.
So in your opinion, boatyard, quota fund, which is recommendation number five, and then fuel. The fuel dock. And the reason that I'm kind of nailing you down on this, and we'll discuss up here, but my concern is with 10 recommendations, it all becomes a bit of a blur. So I personally would like to forward this on, and again, it's up to the board, but I would like to forward it on with an emphasis on 1, 2, or certainly no more than 3 of these items, but approve it in its entirety with that emphasis. Yeah. Eric, did you have a further comment for us?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. So to kind of maybe close the loop on Ron's question there, I mean, it is a big report. What we're hoping for tonight is board approval to move it forward for council ultimate adoption. If obviously, Ron, you want some more time to drill down into this and dig into it a little deeper. It's going to be public comment period open for a month. Ultimately, it goes back to council, and we'll take all the comments, kind of like a SQL analysis where, all the comments are received. Some of them may create changes in here based on comments and community input, and you're part of the community, and that's what we're looking for. So if we can get stuff from you tonight and you've got specifics, great. Alan said he's got a couple. He came to my office a couple of days ago and showed me some of those little things he's got. Absolutely, we're still taking that. This isn't the only opportunity where you're going to get to have a chance at it and give us your comments. So, moving it forward, if you can prioritize and look at it more in a global view, and it's the bread and butter year-round, especially with trawlers, you've got 10,000-gallon capacity. I mean, those guys were going through a lot of fuel, and they were going through it year-round, and that was always kind of the backbone of the fuel dock. Well, as the federal buyout came along and a lot of the trawlers went along, then the Nature Conservancy buyout, our trawl fleet shriveled up to a whisper of what it formerly was. The fuel dock struggled, and we as landlords, have been subsidizing that in rent, basically, since then. It's gotten better, I think, with, as Henry has said, and Rick and everybody else, the fleet is morphed, it's changed, it's adapted, with the Marine Life Protection Act and other regulations that have come down on fishery management plans, nearshore fishery management plans, and it's ratcheted down. I think the fleet, went through a winnowing period where the barely viable operations are gone, and now it's the strong have survived. And I think between marketing and marketing ourselves and marketing seafood and all these efforts that have come together, we've pulled ourselves back up by our bootstraps, and we're starting to do a lot better, and things are doing better. And as a subsequent happening of that is the fuel buying has gone back up and they're starting to do better. I don't think it's a making money hand over fist kind of thing. It's definitely not a two fuel dock town anymore like it was back in the day. But I think it's gotten viable again, and now we need to relook at that. As that lease has expired, it's time to look at that lease and create the best fuel dock situation we can. So that answer your question?
Yes.
I'd also at this point in time invite Rick Algert, our former harbor director, to the podium to just share with us any comments that you have about this report.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Reisner's question about time frames. There is a technical aspect to the. This project was completed with the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation grant. That grant was set to expire on March 31, 2014, and we extended it for 6 months. So you do have some time. The sooner we can close out the grant, the better the work's getting done. And I think we would, hope that you would process this as quickly as possible and keep the momentum you have moving. But you could certainly extend it out to some extent. Otherwise, I'll answer questions. I have lots of opinions on what I've heard, but I'll try and hold those.
So any other questions for Rick or Henry while they're at the podium? If not, we'll move on to further discussion.
I have a question. What happens, closing out the grant, what happens at that point? I mean, what is supposed to have happened and what happens?
So the grant paid the consultant and also me as an employee of the city to manage the consulting activity and the grant activity. So basically we need to make a report. I mean, the grant's a contract, essentially. We need to make a report no later than September 30th on how we spent the money and get the final payment. In fact, they retain, I think, 15 or 20%, so it's hanging out there, and we can't get the last 15 or 20% until we do the closeout report.
And the closeout report only happens if the city council accepts the...
No, I'll do it. I mean, if that's the result of it, I don't, that's what we'll report to them in the grant, the money's spent.
You need to know one way or the other.
Well, yes, I wanted to bring that up, as it would certainly, this, the grant needs to be closed out by September 30th. Hopefully, the implied question in a lot of this is so what's going to happen next with this report and is it going to be just another study that sits on the shelf? And I'm sure that's what everybody's worried about. And what can the public do to support that? I think Henry's pointed out the recommendations are there, and that's what he thinks. And I think the stakeholders in the community have said those are the ideal projects for people to work on. We did this plan in Monterey. It took a substantial amount of time. It was finally accepted in September 2013 or October 2013 by their city council, and they're already working on their priority projects. They're moved into implementation stage. So, it's up to the leaders in this community if we make this project, if the city council accepts it, and the city council directs implementation and priorities that you help them set, and the staff will then work on it. I think there's a lot of momentum in this community to potentially access money and programs that will help do your project, such as the boatyard. The only way we'll know is to try.
Okay. I just wanted to make a comment that obviously the two things of major interest are the boatyard and the quota fund. The boatyard's fairly straightforward, easy to get a handle on. We need one. Boatyards are closing up and down the coast. Opportunities getting better all the time.
It was a little uncomfortable, too. Having the language focus so much on the quota fund and driving almost as a driver of this report, I don't necessarily agree with. As you'll note, that specific recommendation, we've talked about the quota fund. I'll do my program's coming up next. I'll tell you all about it and answer all your questions. But that recommendation's about a community organization that's going to try to help and have a better voice in regulatory affairs and try to help continue this momentum to organize ourselves and to be pointed in how and strategic in how we approach these problems. Regulations are not getting better. The fishermen have a tougher time still every year. Costs and regulations keep going up. And from a city's perspective, infrastructure continues to be more difficult, more expensive. We lose it up and down the coast. You all know. I mean, you talked about Eureka, boatyards. We want to build a boatyard, and yet boatyards are closing up and down the coast. You know, is so this city, in my opinion, the city has said, well, we're not going to accept. We lost so much that we need to try and do something in the face of these huge economic obstacles that, you know, still exist to try and preserve what we have left and even maybe enhance some facilities. So I think that's what this report is all about, and trying to keep the momentum in the organization moving. And that's the only, you know, I think that's the way we can beat these economic obstacles, because otherwise we're going to be like, you know, continue to be like these other ports and harbors. We continue to lose marine dependent uses and lose fishing businesses.
Other questions or comments for Rick or Henry? Yes, Dana.
One little idea here is with this plan, I mean, having this in place for the city, is that going to help us with funding as far as grants and stuff too? I mean, we have a plan, so that's a big step up. In your opinion, I mean, that just seems like it would follow.
Yes. I think it's one of the key things. This is, as Henry noted, it's this type of plan is called out in federal. In the federal regulatory, the basic law that sets federal fisheries regulations, obviously that isn't going to hurt. Yeah. We're getting a reputation as being innovators and people who aren't just lying down and complaining about all the problems. And we're showing real social, you know, cohesion and organization in trying to approach these. Those are the kind of thing that grants and low-interest loan programs and foundations would like to hear, I think.
Yeah, sure, Henry.
I think one of the other things that the plan puts us in a position that there's a potential program in place to mitigate for harm that has come from the ITQ program to harbors, to ports, small fishing communities, and it's called adaptive management. It hasn't been instituted yet, but having a plan in place will facilitate the cities or the fishing communities' access to potential whatever mitigations the federal government plans. The initial plan was to have 10% holdback, or 10% of the total quota will be held back and distributed to communities that have been adversely affected by catch errors or by the quota plan, and having a CSP in place will certainly put this community in a better position to benefit from those programs.
Thank you. So at this time, I'm going to veer a little bit and just reopen public comment, because we've had some conversations, some further facts have come to light here. So I'll reopen comment. If there's anyone in the public that would like to address the board with comments on this plan, please step forward, state your name and your city of residence, and any comments you have, please.
Is that how it works?
Uh-huh. Your name and city.
My name is John Gillespie. I'm a local fisherman. I live in Santa Margarita. And what I've heard tonight, I want to comment on the when you set down the priorities, that list, I can't remember how it went together, but the quota, I think there is a timeline on when that can be divested by the current holder, and there is an issue of it needing to kind of get into play here, as well as that adaptive management, addressing that with the federal government, and in line with one of the other issues, implementation things, was the regulatory, I forgot how it was termed, for keeping track of the regulations. They all kind of go hand in hand, and if we are assertive as a community, we've often been able to sway them to see the light and the logic of the approach. And I would really urge the council to get after this quote
verbiage that's in the staff report, that as resources and priorities allow, as directed by staff. The second would be to simply not forward this. I don't really foresee that happening, but that would be the second angle. And then the third that I could see would be what I suggested before, forwarding this to the city council with three items as priorities, not in any specific order, because I think there's some passion about the boatyard. And the other two that I've seen identified are item number 5, which we'll call the quota fund right now. That's not what it's named as, number 5, but the quota fund. And then number 2, the fuel dock. So instead of us haggling back and forth on which one might be number 1, number 2, and number 3, we could identify those top 3. So those are 3 different approaches that I see that we could take. And again, I'm open and amenable to other approaches. Gene, you had a comment?
Yes. This report incorporates a lot of information that we received over the last several years. And I would not want to do anything to impede it at this point.
Yeah.
Another question, Alan, is was there anything significant that you saw as an error in the report that cannot be addressed later on?
Well, there was one small issue of a $400 million error. Nearshore fishery was identified as having an ex vessel value of $415 million since 1990. I believe the total figure for all the fisheries is closer to $20 million. So when you add the bar graphs up, it doesn't come to anywhere near. There's a typo, you know, but significant, you know. You don't want to let things like that get by you. Also, a crane was identified as being 17,000 pounds, say 14 load. There's serious doubt about that. Small thing. Once again, it's just a little error that slipped by. I did want to note that the boatyard in Moss Landing is in trouble. That's definitely a point in favor of the boatyard. I personally have a preference for seeing a boatyard that where at least the travel lift portion of the boatyard, the hauling of the boats in and out, the blocking up of the boats, is run by city employees, run by the harbor department. I have a special prejudice against that. I haul out in a place called Iwako, Washington. Works very well up there. It helps to keep the cost of things down as opposed to having it. It is a monopoly, you know, if you lease it out and then someone runs it for the maximum profit, things can get out of hand. I talked with Eric about it, and we noted some things about it. It's an interesting concept. I realize the city doesn't really want to get involved in that kind of thing. And I would say, you know, having shipwrights and things like that, you know, contract on their own is perfectly acceptable. But I really think I personally have that prejudice for the haul out if it does occur. Also, I heard a rumor that there was some money available for the boatyard, but there was a time constraint on that, possible funding from the British Petroleum payout in the Gulf. Now, I don't know how this is hearsay, but that money will only be available for a short amount of time before it gets grabbed. And it was an additional reason to move on the boatyard. There was no EVV figure for the sablefish, and I thought it was an interesting the EVV since 1990, the full income of the fishery over this 22-year period, was an interesting way to compare the fisheries and it bothered me that some had it and some didn't. And another small matter. Also, vessel monitoring system. You mentioned it in there and say that it's for limited access permit boats, but it's also open access. All open access boats have to have a vessel monitoring system on board. We don't like that. It's an example of the government passing the cost of enforcement onto the fishermen. Well, the fisherman's already in stress, and the government, you know, spends a lot of money. It just seems unnecessary. And that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. I appreciate those comments.
My last comment is I think Morro Bay is on the forefront of this kind of community support for the local fishermen. And we've got international exposure here. So I think that we ought to continue on this thing and move it as fast as we can forward.
Thank you, Gene. Ron?
Mr. Chairman, this is a, quote, draft, unquote, report. Are we proposing to advance to the council a draft report, or can this be finalized in short order, perhaps with some corrections?
Well, I'll bring Henry back up again briefly, but my understanding that, I mean, this. I'll take Dana's comment, and then I'm going to go ahead and make a motion, and we'll deliberate on the motion and see where we go with that. But we literally could spend the rest of the evening on this one easily. So, Dana, do you want to make a comment?
Yeah, I think that the whole document, I mean, this plan, we want to recommend that they adopt this plan. As far as the 10 items, of course, number one, I'm fond of. And but some of these will work themselves out. So I don't think it's necessary that we pick three or anything like that. I think that we can, you know, we can do the whole thing and say, we recommend all of this, and it will all kind of fall into its place. A lot of these are market-driven. They're going to be done by the fishermen organization. And, you know, just things are going to happen along the way that may change these anyway. So that's my two cents.
Yes, Alan.
I have a comment about the priorities. I we have a fuel dock. It works. We may not be entirely happy with the prices there, but I wonder if maybe the cold storage thing got lost in the shuffle. I personally don't have much of a stake in that at this point. It's possible I could use it with albacore late in the season. The cold storage recommendation, in my mind, takes precedence over the fuel dock if you were going to limit it to three.
Thank you, Alan. All right. So that's the challenge, certainly, with numbering one through three. That's why I'm thinking three priority items and no particular item. So I'm going to make this motion. I'll see if I get a second. We'll see if it passes. If not, maybe we can take a different set of three, see if that passes, and if it doesn't, then we can just go for either approving or not approving the entire report. So I move that the Harbor Advisory Board accept the plan, and accept the draft Morro Bay Fishing Community Sustainability Plan, as presented, with special consideration given to recommendations number 1, 2, and 5 in no particular order to the City Council of the City of Morro Bay. So that's my motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Ron. So we'll move into discussion now. I think we've deliberated quite a bit already. So you understand my point with the three issues. My concern is just what Rick said before. It's exactly that this is a report that's done. It's done with grant money, no offense. It's completed. The City Council has a feel-good moment in approving it, and it gets stuck on the shelf the way so many other reports are done, and then it's sort of cherry-picked down the road when out of these 10 recommendations. So I would at least like to see this board give special consideration to three items on this list. So that's where I'm going with it, and in my mind, number one, number two, and number five are at the top of the list in no particular order. The seconder of the motion has the second chance here for discussion, and we'll open it up for further discussion.
Dana, you're more optimistic than I am about the community process washing all of this out in good order. I think it's always helpful. My experience with especially the city, Morro Bay, is it's always helpful to focus them on something. And and insofar, Alan's comment about the fuel dock, I think the harbor director was pretty clear in letting us know that this might be one of a logical candidate for one of the priority items, given that the lease is coming up soon and that the city council is going to have to take a look at that lease.
Good point. So further discussion on the motion that is on the floor at this moment. We'll go down to this end. Gene?
I like Dana's comment.
We know how you're voting, Gene. Lynn?
Yes, a comment on the fuel dock. When you read the report, it says the city should continue to support the presence of the fuel dock. Continuing support is not a highly actionable item. I look at the refrigeration, number three, where something actually needs to get an individual plan and be pushed forward, that perhaps we should take number three in lieu of number two. In general, I would vote to send this to the City Council with our approval, regardless of those three choices.
Okay, thank you. And so it sounds like then also if this motion doesn't pass, we might go a second round with the refrigeration in the place of the fuel dock. That might happen. Further discussion, Alan? Okay. Dana?
And I'm focused, I would say, the limit it to two. The harbor haul-out facility and the quota fund.
Okay. Well, I think I have a good idea how the vote on this is going to go. So if there's no further discussion, I'll go ahead and call the question. Any further discussion to the motion on the table? And the motion, we'll restate it, is to, see if I can restate it here, is to recommend, is to accept this plan, accept the Morro Bay Fishing Community Sustainability Plan, and recommend it to the City Council that they direct staff to implement the plan recommendations as priorities with special consideration given for recommendation number 1, 2, and number 5. All in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
That's two ayes. Against?
Nay.
And any abstains? Were you for or against?
Against.
Okay, so the motion fails 2-5. 2-4 and 5 against. At this point, then, I would look for either of two different motions. One would be a motion to basically a restatement of the last motion except for the two items, which would be the boatyard and the reefer, or simply a motion to approve in its entirety.
I'll make that motion. We take the sustainable plan as written, with maybe comments from Alan included.
Okay. So a motion's been made by Gene to accept the plan as presented and direct staff to implement plan recommendations as priorities, funding, and staff resources allow. Is there a second?
I second.
Seconded by Dana. We'll open it up to discussion. Further discussion?
I'd like to see Alan's comment included in that motion.
Okay. And the seconder of the motion was Dana. Further discussion?
Oh, I'd just like to see this is a good chance for the community that's interested in this to make those comments in the next 30 days to add to this. In any way. Yeah, I am an optimist, but I think we can do this.
My comments will be brief. I would certainly have liked to have seen us include a couple priority items. So you folks that have put this together have heard my fear. You've heard Alan's comments. So those, I think, are duly noted. Any other discussion before I move to a vote? Bill?
Some of the errors that are in the plan, like Alan mentioned here, those will be fixed, correct? Okay. I mean, we have 30 days to fix some typographical and some other types of things that we see fit.
Absolutely. And any other comments? Absolutely.
Okay. Any further discussion? I'll restate the motion. The motion was made by Gene, seconded by Dana, to accept the plan as presented to the City Council and to direct staff to implement plan recommendations as priorities, funding, and staff resources allow. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes unanimously. Thank you. Good job on that discussion, guys. I like having this crowd here. We normally don't get applause when we take a vote. This is great. Thank you very much out there. That's fun. We'll now move on to item B3, which is a presentation on the Morro Bay Quota Fund by Rick Alger. Yes. So we've got a point of personal privilege request. We will take a 5-minute break for some relief, and it will be promptly reconvening in 5 minutes. Thank you.
When I was in speech class, you weren't supposed to say, After a few minutes, I go, did you see a thumb about every other word? I'm going to start marching back. I got 1,400 thumbs after the first 5 minutes.
So did you hear anything of what he said?
Oh, yeah. Warm.
I'm getting cold.
I got it.
That's right. Thank you, and we will reconvene the meeting at this time. It is 8:16 p.m. So we'll now move on to item B3, a presentation on the Morro Bay Quota Fund by Rick Elgert. Rick, if you'd please introduce yourself and give us your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good evening, Board. My name is Rick Elgert. I've been working as a temporary employee for the city since January, I think, 2011, working on two grant-funded projects, one of which was the Fishing Community Sustainability Plans for Monterey and Morro Bay, funded by National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, that by 2003 and 2004. Most of the trawlers in the business were saying that this is no longer a functioning, economically viable fishery. Some were still plugging along, but that happened. That particular timing coincided with the entrance of the Nature Conservancy into the trawl sector. They were leaders in providing a solution to a real problem at the Pacific Fisheries Management Council. They were under a legal order to resolve a EFH designation for trawl, and the Nature Conservancy stepped in and bought 13 permits in the West Coast trawl industry, six of which were from our area, and therefore facilitated a solution at the council that set aside 3.9 million acres, I think, of essential fish habitat for trawl, and did allow that, at least that issue, to come off the table. But as we pointed out, that was a low point in our landings for Morro Bay. I think it got down to about 1.7 in ex vessel value, something along that, about 2006 and 2007. And I don't think it's fair necessarily to blame the Nature Conservancy buying that those trawl permits, because we almost immediately said, wow, we need to get these permits active again and try to figure out ways to put them to use. And I think we've been successful in that. And I think there's kind of a good story in how we have worked the city, the fishing industry, and the Nature Conservancy have worked as sort of unusual partners to try and put those permits back to work, and we've increased landings. But what was also going on at that time was a conversion of this trawl sector in the West Coast groundfish to an ITQ program, or what's often called the catch share program. That had been worked on at the council since about 2002. Around that time, many of the fishermen in the trawl sector were actually working with other folks who supported this ITQ conversion for a lot of reasons, but one of them was because they didn't see a good economic future in the way the regulatory system was at that time. So the trawl participants, the fishermen that at least had permits, and some of the NGOs and some of the council members basically worked on for 8 years to create this catch share program in trawl sector. We found out about that in about 2007, and there are good things with an ITQ program, and I think this will eventually even be an economic model we can work with. It does reduce bycatch. It does create accountability. It does increase environmental performance in some ways. But there are bad things, in my opinion, too, and not all would agree with me, but it clearly is going to cause consolidation in the smaller boat fleets. The costs of this fishery now in an ITQ system with 100% human observers have gone up. And with the ITQ basically means that this is a fungible asset. These permits, they get quota share every year now since 2010. They get quota pounds every year that's based on their quota share ownership in the fishery, and they can sell it. A person who had a permit has a windfall of all this. They can either fish it, they can sell it now that the moratorium's open. They can go to the golf course and lease it out every year and just turn it into a revenue source for them. And what that means is the most capitalized people and the folks with the best, strongest markets and the ability with the bigger boats to create economies of scale are going to end up absorbing up smaller boat and smaller port permits and fishing privileges. That's a big problem. Another thing that when we looked at this, you know, what's the future for our port in this critical area, is that Nature Conservancy owned most of the fishing privileges that were historically creating the landing here. And they were willing to work with us and to try to see if there would be a way to secure that in the community. But there was unlikely to be any individuals who could buy at market value these quota share, these permits. It's just a very expensive proposition. So we've got a problem. We started thinking about solutions. There's a models on the East Coast where they've gone to a sector management that's very close to an IQ program, and they've created permit banks. And even before that in Alaska, there's community development quota funds or banks that were created similar. So that was a model we started looking at. We said, okay, what if we created an entity here based in the community that could figure out a way to buy these quota share that represented the six permits that historically fish share. So now we have a solution to work to. We formed the Morro Bay Community Quota Fund in 2011 officially. It was incorporated in California. And that's a seven-member broad-based community board. It is an independent nonprofit that will, a public benefit nonprofit. And the focus, I could go on for a long time. Would you like to ask questions?
Yeah, we'll
where are you right now?
Excuse me?
Where are you right now in the process, Rick?
So the Morro Bay Community Quota Fund is incorporated in the state of California. Our IRS 501c3 application is pending. We have not received our 501c3 certification yet. We feel fairly confident that we will, since we're very similar to groups such as the Cape Cod Fisheries Trust that has a permit bank out there that has 501c3. They got some, I think they have some issues in this Kansas City nonprofit IRS center. Maybe slowing them down a little these days. They had some kind of thing going on last year. But anyway, so it's been slow for that. But the board has met three times. We're very close. We're in final negotiations to make our first acquisition of quota share and five permits. We hope to be running, operating in by late spring this year.
So, from what I understand, so you received a quota share. The Morro Bay Community Quota has received a share, and now you're going to sell it to some fishermen or something like that?
No, I'm sorry. So we are going to, the Nature Conservancy, for example, is an owner of quota share because of the permits that they bought before it was transitioned to IDQ. Became IDQ, that converted to quota share. That's one of our targets, to purchase the quota share that was historically based in this area. So we've spent a lot of time getting a loan commitment. We think we have a loan commitment, I would say, from the California Fisheries Fund that we think will be sufficient to make this first acquisition. And we're actually applying for other loans.
Ron?
If the chair of the board will indulge me, I have several questions.
Sure.
Rick, let's rattle through these. Has a quota share leasing manager been engaged?
No.
Okay. With recent changes in city management, who is the current public agency member?
Andrew Luker is still our board member. One of our board members is a local agency seat.
With respect, how can Andrea be a public agency member, given that she's not a member of a public agency?
So
I'm delighted she's there, but
yeah, and these things are board decisions and individual decisions. In my personal opinion, I think she could still qualify as a local agency seat. She has the experience there. You know, we need to wrestle through a few things. I'd hate to be put on the spot by that one.
Okay, moving right along. What is the status of the MBCQF financial viability?
Say that again.
Sure. What's the status of the fund's financial viability?
Do you have funding?
Oh, so...
And I don't mean for... You answered Bill's question about purchasing quota share already,
right.
But...
Okay. So we have actually not had any financial activity yet in the nonprofit. The city, with grant activity, mostly led by me, has basically launched this thing and done the work to get it going. So it has no liabilities and no assets yet.
Okay, thank you.
Very soon we hope to change that, mostly on the asset side.
Yeah, so somebody's going to have to get paid to do some stuff, yeah. What is the status, please, of the moratorium on quota sales that was imposed by PFMC?
So there was a three-year, it turned into, originally 2 years, they extended 1 year, three-year moratorium on any sales of quota share, and that was lifted January 1 this year.
Thank you. And I think you've already addressed it. So the Conservancy is prepared to divest itself of quota share. Is that correct?
The Nature Conservancy there's two issues there. There are these ownership control limits. They, in some species and in total accumulation, they actually need to sell some by regulation, not all. They have expressed an interest in selling in some areas more than they actually have to sell because of these ownership control limits.
Okay.
You look like you'd like more of it.
No.
Okay.
So they're prepared to sell?
Yes.
Okay. And finally, thank you for your patience. What's the status of forming a regional fishing association?
So a regional fishing association is a kind of a vague term. It is in Magnuson-Stevens Act, probably an important term. And I would just note, as I was talking to somebody in the audience, that the federal fisheries law that sets up all these management councils, sets everything up, Magnuson-Stevens Act is currently being reauthorized or may be reauthorized. A catch share programs should create community sustainability plans. And so we've done that, and we're one of the first here on the West Coast, and certainly the first very extensive one. So we're sort of defining that, I think, if the council would adopt this.
Thank you for those questions. Ron, any other questions?
Yeah, I have a question.
Alan.
I had a conversation with you a long time ago about this. I think it's important to note that there's another parallel fishery out there besides the ITQ fishery. It's called open access, and the federal government has set aside, I believe it's 15% of the total quota that is available now for open access boats. And there's a lot of boats in the harbor, and there used to be more because there's been a kind of a pinch in this whole process. When they went to 15%, our quotas went down. But there are a lot of boats that were kind of marginal subsistence is the best word, fishermen. You know, they allow us a small amount of quota, and we're able to get enough to keep going. For me, in the wintertime, it helps out. My main fisheries in the summer. Anyway, I asked you if I was going to have any opportunity to participate in this, and you had a variety of reasons why that wasn't going to be able to happen, mainly because I wasn't prepared to, incur all the costs. I wouldn't be able to meet the overhead demands, and I would need to get, fish more regularly. And I pointed out that I'm a fisherman that likes to fish when I want to fish, and then when I don't want to fish, I think that's admirable. Why should a person go out and fish their heart out, if they don't feel like it? We should make room for fishermen that want to fish when they want to fish, when the weather's good. And I was just wondering if any of that has changed or if it still would be impossible for somebody in open access to feasibly enter into any aspect of this.
So I have to comment, Alan, and that, if we're thinking about the same meeting, I think there is a different perspective there because, as I recall, the one, I think I asked for that meeting with you, as I recall. Maybe you're thinking about something else, but I thought that what we were doing was trying to recruit another potential person who might be willing to work in this ITQ fishery. And I didn't mean, if I left you with the impression of all the reasons you couldn't do it, I meant to say, what I should say is that this is, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of people that can participate in this fishery because of the cost, because of the 100% human observers, the additional paperwork, even some meetings with this thing. And I probably went through that list, and you said, oh, my God, what a bunch of baloney.
And pool risk sharing. And
yeah, the risk point. So it isn't easy, and we need to continue to work on building the program and cutting costs and make it easier for participants. So I'm sorry if I left it that way, making it like, because I think I would have told you we would love to have you participate, if you don't mind me speaking personally, could figure out a way that you could do it. Now, to speak about open access just real quickly, I agree it's important, and I would remind you that the city actually, when they were talking about getting rid of open access, the city took a strong position of the management council that to try and preserve open access, and with the fishermen, and they did. Some of us are pretty pessimistic on the long term for that open access sector being available. So I'm a little concerned about that, too, because it's an important part of our landing still.
Do you think that that's likely to disappear once the catch shares goes into effect?
I'm not sure why I would say it, all the different reasons. I think that open access is a target for them. There are people in the regulatory system that certainly don't want to continue that open access because they don't know what people are doing. They don't know who's participating. The nature of it means that you don't have any special permits and things. I'm not saying that's valid, Alan. I think you just know what I'm saying. It's going to be a battle.
I realize you're the messenger and not the decision maker. It seems that the federal system is kind of inherently prejudiced against the smaller fishermen in that regard.
I would say that it's difficult for the smaller fishermen to be well represented at the management council. They are the larger businesses and the larger fishing vessels are pretty well represented and usually come out pretty well.
So, in other words, if I wanted to participate in this permit, the quota that you have access to, I would have to be ready to go into some kind of a full-time operation with a deckhand and in order to generate enough money to overcome the...
Not exactly that. And it's probably a better discussion for more detail, another time. But, I think it can be done part-time. We hope, for example, our first acquisition, we hope to buy 5 permits. There are some permits that could be put to use, even if it was a part-time seasonal person. You're not going to get over that.
Introduce himself, and we look forward to your presentation. Good evening. Thank you, sir. Thanks for inviting me tonight to the Harbor Advisory Board meeting. My name is John Greaser. I'm the executive director of the Central California Seafood Marketing Association. Sweet. Thank you. So CCSMA was invited this evening to build upon a previous presentation, and I wanted to take advantage of this opportunity to go into a little bit more detail about CCSMA, who we are, what we do, fishery management and reform, some community context, as well as our strategic goals, particularly those that our members share with most, if not all, commercial fishermen in Morro Bay. So CCSMA is incorporated as a California Fish Marketing Act corporation. Not getting into the details, it's an obscure area of state and federal law that enables us to engage in certain cooperative marketing activities and protects us from antitrust violations. At the federal level, this was set up at the same time in the 1930s that similar protections were provided to agricultural co-ops to protect them from other monopolistic activities. Through implementation and marketing of fisheries co-management, as well as on and off the water sustainability initiatives, we're working to bring high quality, locally harvested wild seafood to consumers while protecting the health and productivity of fish stocks and habitat and helping to stabilize fishery activity and business in Morro Bay.
We're very much a triple bottom line organization whose purpose and values are about supporting and promoting economic, environmental, and social sustainability in Morro Bay and in the West Coast ground fishery generally. Our mission is to build value and security for our members, their local fishing operations, and their seafood products. The organization currently represents six small independent vessel owner and operators. One of our members last year in 2012 was from Half Moon Bay, as they did not have a similar local cooperative marketing association set up at that time. And one of our members this year is from Moss Landing, where they also don't have such a group. Our focus is and will be on marketing local, wild, and sustainably harvested seafood and the great stories and marine stewardship efforts and activities of our fishermen catching groundfish. A little bit about what our guys are catching. You've heard a lot this evening already about the importance of groundfish in Morro Bay and the Central Coast generally. Within the groundfish complex, some of the main species that our members are harvesting include black cod, petrolean Dover sole, thorny head, various kinds of rockfish. Most of our members, there was just a discussion about part-time fishermen. Most of our members participate in other fisheries for at least part of the year, including Dungeness crab, salmon, and squid. One member, Morro Bay's only trawler today, is a year-round groundfish fisherman. I think it was back in December. You all had the luxury of hearing a great presentation about the different types of gear that not only our members employ, we spoke at that time, but also all commercial fishermen from Morro Bay. So I'm not going to go into any great detail about what exactly these gear types are or how they're employed, but to leave it simply as currently our members employ three different types of gear: trawl, traps or pots, and long lining. I guess similar to the last slide, I'm not sure that it's necessary for me to go into great detail about the fishery management system that is employed for the West Coast groundfish fishery, that being ITQ, individual transferable quota, which is a type of a catch share management system. One of our members own their own quota. As a result, they need to obtain their own quota each year by leasing it at a considerable cost. In addition to these costs, there are numerous other important costs and administrative hurdles associated with participating in the fishery, some of which you've heard about tonight. There is a federally mandated requirement to have 100% human observer status on board at all times, as well as during offloading. The cost right now, the total cost is approximately $400 a day. The federal government continues to subsidize that cost. If you think of it as a reverse wedge, when ITQ went into place, the federal government subsidized all of it, and I believe by 2015, it will be completely upon the shoulders of fishermen to pay for all of it. I believe right now, Rob, correct me if I'm wrong, the average cost per 24-hour period for an observer is about $275. And again, you need to have that observer during your offload as well. In addition to the cost of leasing quota and paying for an observer, groundfish fishermen who participate in this program also have to pay a 5% trawl buyback fee, and as of January 10th of this year, a 3% cost recovery fee that comes off of the X vessel value on landing receipts or settlement sheets at the time of offloading. So collectively, if you add up leasing quota, paying for an observer, paying 5% and a 3% on top of it, these are some of the costs, Mr. Alward, that Rick Algert was referring to. They do add up to very significant and onerous cost burdens on our members, and as a result, oftentimes require an operator to be, let's say, highly engaged in the fishery and have a certain scale associated with what they're doing. That being said, I do want to say that I would never want anyone to confuse the size and scale of our fishery and our boats in Morro Bay or on the Central Coast with what you see in the media from Alaska, 300-foot catcher-processor boats. That is not what we're talking about. Rob's boat, how long is your boat?
56 feet.
56 feet. So we, some may disagree with this, but I think we think of ourselves as small boat fishermen, as small private operators who are struggling to figure this out. And the community partners that have spoken tonight are a big part of that. And I will speak a little bit more about that. So I guess one of the other things that was mentioned a bit tonight is really about a story about fishery reform, not just about fishery management, but about reform. What are we doing via a co-management approach to improve the situation of management and to work together collaboratively, not just within this harbor, but with other associations similar to ours on the California coast to address situations and the challenges in front of us. The California Risk Pool is a coalition of organized groups of fishermen from Morro Bay, Half Moon Bay, and Fort Bragg who are collaborating in a sophisticated manner with the Nature Conservancy to develop solutions to local fishery management challenges. We also employ an idea that essentially is taken from the insurance industry to pool risk. We pool our overfished species together so that when a fisherman has an encounter with overfished species while targeting healthy stocks, they're able to essentially have that encounter covered by this insurance policy, if that is clear. This collaboration privately manages the fishing rights to over 14 million pounds of groundfish annually across 15 million acres of ocean and 600 miles of California coastline. We believe this collaboration has created a highly innovative harvest model that's designed us to effectively target healthy, abundant stocks of fish while avoiding vulnerable overfished species as well as sensitive habitat. I guess most importantly to our mission and purpose, these efforts are providing fresh local seafood to consumers, helping to stabilize fishing industry in small ports across, up and down the California coast, and improving the conservation of marine resources. Quota fund, once they obtain those fishing privileges that Rick described earlier this year. We're delighted about this, allowing local fishermen to have access to affordable local groundfish quota, and we look forward to working with the Quota Fund to develop a viable new entrant program. I emphasize and end with that as it relates to the Quota Fund because that is something that was evidenced and highlighted in the Morro Bay Community Sustainability Plan It's an Achilles heel, frankly, not just in Morro Bay, but in the fishing industry in general. You're facing the average age, I believe, of the American fisherman is 57 years old. We need new entrants, not just in the groundfish fishery, but in commercial fishing in general. So while CCSMA's main reason for existence is to build value and security for our members through cooperative marketing activities, I wanted to conclude my presentation tonight by focusing on opportunities to collaborate with other commercial fishermen, the City of Morro Bay, and other interested parties, ways that we can help address some key challenges and recommendations that you've heard tonight in the Community Sustainability Plan that are faced by the fishing industry broadly here in Morro Bay. Two specific examples that I thought I'd mention tonight that I think will go a long way to stabilizing and growing Morro Bay's commercial fishing industry include, one, look at that handsome guy, off the boat sales. Again, I think in a previous presentation, the Harbor Advisory Board has heard discussion about the importance and potential role that off-the-boat sales could play in our community. I think you've seen empirically this evening the role that it's playing in Pillar Point, as well as other harbors up and down the coast of California. I think it's an exciting opportunity. Many believe that physical infrastructure is required, i.e. a sales dock. I'm not quite sure that I or my members specifically agree with that. As you see in Pillar Point, there is some infrastructure, but the actual sales and transactions themselves are occurring at individual slips. So I don't want to propose reasons why we need to drag our feet anymore on this. Mark Tognazzini and others, as long as 10 years ago, sort of led the way on this, and I think it's really just about rebuilding something that previously existed. I think it's an exciting opportunity, one that many fishermen who are interested in direct marketing and engaging with consumers could take advantage of. It connects fishermen with consumers who are interested in knowing about their food, provides fishermen market access and control of their product. It enables them to market and sell their fish and make more money doing it. It promotes tourism and supports the economy of Morro Bay, and it showcases our beautiful working waterfront as well as the fishing culture of our historical port. Once again, my work is done for me. You've heard that now five times from me, but I'm trying to keep you awake here. So why is this important? So many reasons. Painting and re-zinking, cleaning, mechanical work, transport, emergencies, etc. Many parties share the need for a haul-out facility in this community, ranging from the Coast Guard to commercial fishermen to liveaboards. Most fishermen, as I believe you know, now travel hundreds of miles to Ventura, Oakland, or other communities to haul out. Having a viable haul-out facility here would save time and money for fishermen. There are significant benefits to the environment. It would keep money in our local economy and help stabilize and grow the local fishing industry. I've also recently heard that PG&E has given the large parking lot south of the stacks to the City of Morro Bay. And you've heard tonight that a initial subcommittee has been formed that's moving this activity and recommendation forward with great zeal. I'm going to conclude there. There's a lot more that we're engaged in more of the direct marketing and branding front. But again, my focus this evening was talking about more collaborative opportunities and areas that we share interests with other commercial fishermen here in Morro Bay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. We appreciate your presentation. Hang around for a second there for some questions. It is running a little late, so if you could be rather succinct in your answers, we'd appreciate it.
Sure. There is a little bit of history here, however. There was a previous entity, an entity that preceded us called the Central Coast Sustainable Marketing Association that was also a member of the California Risk Pool. However, that entity, for a variety of reasons too long to get into tonight, was not successful in existing. And a few of the members that were most interested in that entity essentially closed it and created a new one with a sharper focus.
Do you know approximately how many members there were at that time when it closed?
I believe there were as many as 10.
Okay. So it just the number just seems small to me. Is there an impediment, or how would you view it as being received amongst the fishing community?
It's a great question.
Again, brevity, please.
And I appreciate you asking it. You know, we are a subs. All of our members, for example, are members of the Morro Bay Commercial Fishing Association. We are essentially a subset of commercial fishermen who have very unique needs and face very unique management restrictions, costs, and hurdles. So we organized around those needs. There, frankly, are only five people, the sixth being the gentleman from Moss Landing. There are only five fishermen in Morro Bay who are in the ITQ program. So there are no... We are actively engaging in developing a mechanism to grow our membership and to incentivize participation in the ITQ program and in co-management generally. But the reality is that there are only five guys out there on the water, that three boats that are in the ITQ program. We hope to grow that, but that's just the frank reality of the landscape we're working in.
All right. Thank you, John. Any other questions for John from board members? Side. Oh, great. Thank you again, John, for your presentation.
You're
very welcome. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And the next item that we have that concludes the public hearings, reports, and appearances, item B on the agenda. We'll now move on to item C, unfinished business. This will be a public comment item as well, because I've had members of the public ask to comment on this. So the way that this will work is we will have the report, then we will receive public comment, and then any questions or comments from board members. So we'll receive the report from the chairperson of our ad hoc committee, Dana, and we'll let him stay up here at the dais. Thank you, Dana.
Thank you, Chair. We had a boatyard haul-out ad hoc committee meeting Tuesday, the 21st of January, and in attendance were committee members Gene Dowdy, Brett Cunningham, and myself, invited guests from the MBCFO, or Tom Hafer and Jeremiah O'Brien. Menka Sethi from Lisa Weiss Associates was also in attendance. To begin, in an overview of the previously proposed three haul-out sites and two yard sites was given. Next was a discussion on the City Council's action concerning agenda item D1 at their January 13th meeting. More specifically, Verge's fishing proposal of lease sites 107 and 108 also considered one of the three potential haul-out sites referred to as Site B. After much discussion, the consensus was that Site A, north of the power plant intake building, was the most favored haul-out site. Possible yard sites for the haul-out site were then discussed. Of course, the directly across the street at the power plant, behind the gatehouse building, was the most preferred site. We referred that as site one for yard site one. Alternate boatyard site possibilities discussed included the parking lot behind the intake building, the parking lot in front of the gatehouse building, and the city property between the North Embarcadero Road and the power plant property. That was what was in RM's original design previously. Driving the travel lift down the Embarcadero from haul-out site A, north of the intake building, to south of the power plant was considered unfeasible due to its width. Other topics that were discussed were the travel lift itself and the ways that support it and make it possible to haul out, the trailer boat hoist and dock, yard drainage and catchment, and grant funding sources. This is just a quick report of kind of where we've come around the block, as you might say, in the last year as far as...
Committee to public comment. Please approach the podium and state your name and city of residence.
Good evening, Chair Eccles and members of the board. My name is Kathy Novak from Novak Consulting, and I'm here tonight representing Verge's Landing. First, I'd like to thank the Boatyard Haulout Ad Hoc Committee for all their time and effort on this project. Ms. Moores, along with me, have always felt that there is a need for a facility such as this. At your December meeting, there was a discussion by the board in regards to the lease site development proposed by Verge's and the potential for this location to be used as a boat haulout. Verge's offered support and the desire to work with the city because we felt there was an adequate room for both of these projects to have in the same area. In January, Verge's proposal was presented to the City Council. However, they delayed the action on the proposal until after the ad hoc committee had more time to research the areas that would be most appropriate for the haulout. Verge's has a long road ahead since permitting process is an arduous task and can be quite lengthy through the city and the Coastal Commission. There are studies required, and more specifically, they need to be done at a precise time. With that said, and based upon the ad hoc committee's recommendation to the board that the haul-out facility be in the preferred location north of the power plant intake building, I would respectfully ask that the board reaffirm its support for the Verge's proposal. In addition, I would ask that the board provide this information to the council as soon as possible so that Verge's can get back on their agenda. The council has postponed this item until April, but to provide time for the ad hoc committee sufficient time. So if you can give some recommendations to council at this point in time and not wait till April, it would be greatly appreciated so Verge's could move along. That concludes my comments. I'd be happy to answer your questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kathy. Any further public comment? Please state your name.
John Gillespie, local fisherman.
Once again, John, into the
mic.
Once again, please, because you were away from the microphone.
Oh, yeah, John Gillespie. I'm a local fisherman.
Thank
you. I live in Santa Margarita, and my boat's in Morro Bay. I think a boatyard is a great idea for here, as long as it doesn't encroach on aspects of other people's habitat. I was thinking Ventura Boatyard is kind of one that might be a good one to view. It has a very similar proposed weight. I believe they're talking 100 tons, and they have a small spot that they have to work out of with the sandblasting and painting and all the stuff that happens. That they have on one side natural lands and then a lot of residential and tourism around there, and they've been able to make it go. It seems like a pretty reasonable thing. I'd like to see the studies that they come up with on this as to where the proposal was. I didn't get to see the maps or the sites and stuff. I might have some ideas on it, but I think it'd be a great idea. There's a lot of issues that come up with boats, and it's a big hassle being a boat owner, trying to figure out where you're going to get your work done and where you can go and get it done. And it's been my experience that I really like places that, There's cool boatyards and there's others, and you just don't like to go to the other ones, you know. And part of that, what seems to work is the port operated ones like in Iwako, I guess Eureka. That one's fairly cool. It's been my experience that the owners I've known of boatyards were pretty good guys, and they sort of helped you out and they knew what you're up against. But I've seen the degradation of the harbor at San Luis Harbor's boatyard when they turned it over to a lessee, and it became a for-profit thing, and it really undermined. It's no longer a cool boatyard, you know, and it changed the whole picture of things. And I think it might be within the ken of the city to be able to operate something like this. As I heard earlier, just basically the lift and the blocking and the transport, you know, it doesn't take that many guys to do it, and it's a pretty easy to do thing, and then outside people can come in and work. But when you start putting a profit thing behind it where someone's going to nickel and dime you and push you all the way, frankly, as a boat owner, I'm going to look for someplace else to go. But I'd like to see the city have a boatyard here. It'd probably be a helpful thing, and I hope we could work it out. I really do. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. Any other public comment on this item? Seeing no further public comment, the public comment period is closed, and we'll open this up to some board discussion. So all we're doing is receiving an update right now.
The board, of course, is free to ask any questions of Dana, the chair of the ad hoc committee. And one of the public commenters asked for some action tonight. That's not an agendized item, so I think if any board members want to make some remarks with regard to that, they're...
There were some environmental concerns there with eelgrass and otters, and then getting the travelers to go across basically the thoroughfare of the Embarcadero and that part of the Embarcadero was going to create some cross traffic. So, and then the parking lot to the south of the PG&E plant or Diagene plant looks like that's pretty much parking for the city for vehicular parking.
Are there, in the north area, there is not part of that ESHA that would be a problem?
The area that we're thinking about proposing for a yard is behind the gatehouse.
I see. Oh, okay. We'll not extend in front of it. Thank you.
Alan?
Yeah, I'm happy to hear the report. I would like to volunteer to be on the ad hoc committee. I don't know if you've got room for anybody else, but I'm real interested in this, and I have a lot of ideas.
We can have up to three members on of the board. How many members from the board do you have currently?
Two.
So you currently have two. Mm-hmm. So if you're willing to accept him as chair, I would be happy to appoint him.
I'm happy to have him. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Maybe I should say this now. Brett Cunningham, who has been on ours, has resigned, and he was not of the board anymore because he's had to move back east to build his boat for 6 months. Jeremiah has offered to take his place as a non-board member.
Okay. So, as chair, one of the privileges I have is appointing board members, so I appoint Alan to the board.
Thank you.
So you've got another person on the board as well. Other other questions or comments at this end?
No, there's another
Bill? Ron?
Dana, what are the key factors that would make the committee subcommittee's preferred site viable? I've heard one, which is somebody acquiring property which is currently owned by Dynergy.
You're asking what makes it more favorable?
No, I'm asking what are the key factors, if the committee has had an opportunity to evaluate that would make that site viable.
Okay, more viable. Well, that's a good question. Right now, it seems like there's a few things going on in this area. Obviously, the power plant decommissioning, we don't know what's going to happen next there. So there's possibilities in that realm. We'd like to think that the Coast Guard, with what they're trying to do, improvements might be helpful, but I don't really think that's a reality, so I guess I can't really say that.
Dan?
Yeah?
Wouldn't you say that the primary motive would be the haul-out facility itself, which would be located just north of the intake building, which was deemed the spot from a waterfront master plan for a haul-out location, and deep water, several conditions like that.
I understand that. I've been following this for 12 years. However, while that might be the preferred site for the piers, the boats have got to go someplace. So where would the boats go?
Well, the easiest place is to go straight across the street. You know, to run it down the Embarcadero to the south of the PG&E property means we'd have to probably regrade the road, put in, you know, sub-base, new concrete down the entire length of the Embarcadero to get over there. So it seems like the smartest way to go is just straight across. Whether we own the property or not, that's our proposal.
Okay. And what size lift is the has the committee been considering?
100-ton hoist, travel lift.
And has the committee developed any sort of ballpark cost estimates for the haul-out site and then the uplands site?
Well, until we know of the yard site, you know, as depending on if there's acquisitions that need to be land acquisitions, that obviously is going to change the number all over the place. Originally, we were looking at a quick run. Whether you just went into the parking lot right there or even across the street in front of the gatehouse building, those could be possible yard sites. Originally, RRM had used an area just north, a big area, that was deemed ESHA. Now, talking to the consultant at from Lisa Weiss Associates, saying that there is there was precedence last year in Malibu that an ESHA area could have a use if the use was specific to marine related, that an ESHA area may be used. So that was very interesting. So if that were possible, that definitely could give you an area that is city property.
Do you happen to know how large that is offhand?
No, but I have drawings of these are RRM's drawings, and they have future expansion sites, phase beyond the boatyard, all the parking you would need, and a big storage yard past that. So it's pretty big.
And Dana, for the viewers and listeners, ESHA, is that environmentally sensitive habitat?
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right.
And my last question is, and forgive me, I just haven't been involved. So why did the committee target 100 as opposed to a 75?
Well, in speaking with the fishermen, this was what was going to facilitate the fleet more so in the city of Morro Bay, the fleet that's here. And also they thought it would attract, with the predicament that some of these other boatyards are in, that it was going to attract more business too. So they wanted to have something that was going to be able to haul any of the boats that were here, and that's where they came up with 100-ton. I think in RM's design it was up to a 70-ton originally. But
well, a 75 is rated, as I'm sure you guys know, is rated for 165,000, and 100 is rated for 225,000. 225,000-pound boat's a real big boat. I don't think I it would be interesting to know how many boats that are in the bay that have a displacement of that, but I'm not being argumentative. I'm just chatting, and this may not be the venue to do that.
Yeah, there in this feasibility proposal here, they talk about looking at what is really needed, you know, as far as the size and what boats are here and all of that information. So we're looking at this and seeing how we can work together with the Morro Bay Commercial Fishing Organization and come up with more information.
Sure. Yeah, the last one of these that my firm was involved in professionally was in Port Townsend, Washington in 2011 and 2012, and there was about, at that time, there was about $500,000 delta project-wise, and just in terms of the lift and the piers, not the backlands, about $500,000 delta between a 75 and 100 installation.
Thank you, Ron. Any other questions or comments? So I do have a comment, and it is with regard to the council action on this item. Obviously, we can't affirm tonight that action. We took that vote with regard to verges and the recommendation there for that project that came before us. It was a unanimous vote from the board. I was disappointed in the action that the council took on that item using the potential of the boatyard haul out as a deterrent for approving that project. To me, it just didn't seem to make sense. The boatyard has been on the table, as Ron just mentioned, for at least the last 12 years, and I'm sure probably longer than that. And things like the Harbor Walk and other things were developed as this boatyard has been a potentiality as well. So I was just disappointed to see that. I think that obviously there is a strong desire for the boatyard. I myself have my doubts about the economic viability of it. So it would be nice to have that, but it is still, in my eyes, down the road quite a bit. Whereas Verges, we have a business that's ready to go, that has their plans submitted, and was moved on from this board with unanimous approval. So I was myself very disappointed to see the council take the action they did on that. But that's my opinion. Any other comments before we move off of this item? Eric.
Your action still stands, obviously. You still unanimously support it.
Correct. My parliamentary procedure evades me a moment. I don't believe we need a second for the... we'll take a second, just to be sure, and then we'll take a vote. So we'll open up to nominations for the chair, and then after that, the vice chair. So are there any nominations for chair? Bill?
I'd like to nominate Jeff Eccles for the chair of the Harbor Advisory Board.
And I'm not sure that I need a second, but I'm better safe than sorry. Is there a second for that?
Second.
All right. There's a second by Gene. Any discussion? And if anyone wants a secret ballot, we can do that. No? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? I'm so tempted to say no, but I won't. So passes unanimously. And our current vice chair, and thank you for that vote of confidence. I appreciate that very much. Our current vice chair is Bill. And there were a few other names kicked around of folks that then quickly went on one and said, no, but let's put Bill up there again. So are there any nominations for vice chair?
I nominate Bill.
And when I got to be careful with Brown Act stuff. When I say quickly passed around, it was a one-on-one situation. It wasn't amongst more than one board member at a time.
I'll second that nomination.
So Bill was nominated by Dana, seconded by Gene. Any discussion? Does anyone feel the need for a secret ballot? All in favor of Bill being vice chair, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Good.
All right. Good job. So we have a chair and vice chair for the coming year. That concludes item D. Now we move on to item E, declaration of future agenda items. If you look back at the minutes from 2 months ago, December's meeting, there's a list there, and Eric generally goes over that with us as well as any other items. So, Eric, future agenda items?
Sure. I'll just look at what Polly's got. Boatyard Hall, we just looked at that. I'll just rattle these off and then what I've got in my notes. Morbid Boatyard did that. Community Quota Fund did that. Central Coast Seafood Marketing did that. State Park Marina, result of City Council meeting. I can bring that as an update. Harbor Advisor Board bylaws change, result of City Council meeting. I can bring that. Coast Guard building, I mean, that we've kind of spoken about that a while. It's off again, on again. I can bring that next time if you want to bring Coast Guard, Marine Mammal Center informational report, liveaboard ordinance, specifically about marine surveyor and who can do the liveaboard inspections. I've got going back quite a ways planning process for the power plant. Now that it looks like the power plant's future is a little more definite, that may be something that's a little more pertinent. That came from August 2012. Clean Marina is kind of more of a presentation on what the Clean Marina program is all about. State Park Marina, kind of an overview of State Park Marina. Marine Mammal Center, we talked about that. Liveaboards talked, Coast Guard, and then budget. Budget usually comes in, I want to say May, March and April. I'm starting to develop a department budget, so we generally try to bring that to the board for a nod of approval on what we're proposing, so we can bring that as well. That's what I have on my list. Anything you want to add, I guess, is where we're going.
I had asked you over the course of the last month about either the Coast Guard or even potentially somebody from the Sheriff's Office representing the interagency response to the Panga boats.
Oh, yeah.
Almost like a PSA, a public service announcement, or just a presentation on do's and don'ts. Should we use our cell phone or Channel 16? And
Panga 101 slash PSA.
Yep.
Okay.
You know, if they have a public relations officer,
The gentleman from KSBY at Ian Parkinson's office, he would probably come. Exactly right.
Yeah,
Tony.
So
that would be one that you could. He would probably more than likely love to come.
Yeah, it's a good idea. And there's I know there's a gal down in Coast Guard Long Beach that kind of heads up this Marine unit that looks at this sort of stuff. That she'd be glad to come. She came and gave us a little one-on-one with it.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll put together
something. I think we have consensus on. On that, yeah, so if we could see that at some time in the near future, that'd be good. Any other items from board members for future agenda items? Ron?
I just have a couple of questions, not having been involved. Dana, as the chair of the Boatyard Haulout Subcommittee, how soon in the future, and given the intense interest of this in the community, how soon in the future would the committee have something in addition to report?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that I would normally find out the feasibilities with all of that information, all that data that they can compile and put together for us.
So it would be, therefore, this is a question, not a statement, it would be a good thing for the subcommittee to reach out to the fishermen and find out what the scope of that study is intended to be.
I have that here in writing.
Then would they be willing to share?
So I'll have to call a point of order here. I don't want us to get too far away from a declaration of future agenda items.
Okay, so are we interested in a report on the developments of the Coast Guard facility, the expanded Coast Guard facility? Yeah. Are we interested in that?
Yeah, that's on our pending list. And on these pending items, the way generally it has worked is if we have new information before us, then that gets bumped up to the top of the list. But we've already made a decision, yes, that the board is interested in hearing about that, so it's on our
list.
I'm
sorry, I misunderstood. I thought Eric was giving us options as opposed to giving us an agenda list.
Those are all items that we've, as a board, have given the support of, so we need at least three board members to concur that for a future agenda item, and when we get those three, it goes on the list.
And then just for information, what I'll do is, you know, obviously things are time sensitive. We'll get them on, and I work with the chairman, and we set the agenda, and we kind of go down the list, and, you know, something's time sensitive. Hey, Jeff, you know, what about this? Okay, let's put that on. Or I'll call Dana, you know, hey, Dana, you got ready for a report, I think, last time. Maybe you weren't. So he said, no, not ready yet. We'll go next time. So we work together and kind of cherry pick off the list at what's pertinent, what needs to move.
So any other items for future agenda? Yes, Bill.
I was just thinking about one. We got a report about a year ago by a couple here in the community about upgrading the Rock parking lot and the whole area there. Whatever came out of that? You remember that whole schematic that was so, I mean, you know, some of it was okay, but
I remember the volleyball courts.
Yeah. So I was just curious. I mean, is that just something that they...
That did go before council. So, and if I I can't remember specifically the action that council took, but council considered it and sort of filed it away, is my
council
recollection.
Council considered it, gave a little staff direction that staff worked on, and it's kind of just laying there fallow right now.
Yeah. But at any time, any board member would want to bring that up again, we have that option, certainly. Any other future agenda items? Seeing none, I'll look. Anything else, Eric? All right. I'll look for a motion to adjourn. It's moved by Gene, Seconded by Dana.
I'll
All in favor,
motion.
Please say aye. Thank you. Thanks for a good meeting.
So, Gene, I thought that
and to
you
say
were,
that,
I thought you were in favor of the South Beach here.
No.
I thought you were.
No, I was in favor of the.
Sure.